This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America on this U.S. politics edition of the program. 187 minutes. What was former President Donald Trump doing or not doing while a violent mob attacked the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021? The day the Senate was ceremonially counting the Electoral College votes from the 2020 elections, which resulted in a victory for Democrat Joe Biden. That was the theme of the latest public hearing conducted by the House of Representatives Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. Here is how Chairman Benny Thompson, a Democrat from Mississippi, summarized the committee's findings thus far in his opening remarks at this 8th televised hearing held on July 21st.
Over the last month and a half, the Select Committee has told the story of a president who did everything in his power to overturn an election. He lied, he bullied, he betrayed his oath. He tried to destroy our democratic institutions. He summoned a mob to Washington. After war, on January 6th, when he knew that the assembled mob was heavily armed and angry, he commanded the mob to go to the Capitol, and he emphatically commanded the heavily armed mob to fight like hell.
Benny Thompson, chairman of the Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the Capitol. On this edition of the program, we review the significance and impact of the 8 hearings which have been conducted thus far. According to House co-chair Congresswoman Liz Cheney, a Republican from Wyoming, there will be more hearings in September as new evidence and witnesses are emerging. To what extent have the hearings illuminated and deepened our understanding of the events leading up to January 6, 2021? And what are the political and legal implications for accountability and justice for all those involved in the conspiracy to disrupt the peaceful transfer of power? Well, for more on the hearings, next steps, and of course, a preview of the November midterm elections, we turn to our veteran analysts. John Fortier is a political scientist and resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. That's a conservative think tank here in Washington. And Jim Kessler, he's executive vice president for policy at Third Way, a center-left policy group based here in Washington. And they join me via Microsoft Teams. Gentlemen, as always, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
So, John Fortier, let me get your take on the main takeaways from the series of hearings, and particularly the most recent one in which the committee focused on the 187 minutes while President Trump was in the White House doing basically nothing, or at least not taking action against the violence at the Capitol.
Well, I guess going into these hearings, I was of the belief that the hearings wouldn't change a lot of minds. And I guess at the end of the day, I still think a lot of people will hold to their earlier views. What I think the hearings have done, though, is not so much tell us a different story, but really give us some color to the story, color that is very unfavorable to Donald Trump. We knew that the president was stirring up a crowd and failing to calm them down as things got worse on January 6th. But some of the testimony, especially I think some of the testimony of a young aide to the chief of staff, Mark Meadows, really added an element of Donald Trump unhinged and really acting in a way that is not presidential, but really was even more unhinged and really pushing in these directions in a stronger way than we thought. So I think these things have been more damaging to Donald Trump. Although, again, I think the story we knew of the elements before were there. The color has really not helped him. You know, at the end of the day, is this going to be what is going to be about our election? And will lots of opinions be changed? And I still think the committee, maybe not its own fault, but the fact that it is essentially a partisan committee and Republicans are not playing ball has hurt it a bit. But I do think the testimony was compelling in ways that just showed Donald Trump's character while this was going on in ways that make him look worse than we even thought.
Jim Kessler, take it away.
Well, I'm not going to contradict anything that John said. I think he summed it up very, very well. I just want to add a couple of points and a couple of caveats. It's really hard to say how much damage this has done to Donald Trump. By all rights, it should be a death blow to his political career. He's unhinged. He's undemocratic. Frankly, it's anti-American democracy. But I want to read to you a quote that is in a column that was written by Jennifer Rubin, who is a former conservative columnist who turned against Donald Trump that I think sums things up pretty well. She writes, watching the committee's video compilation of Republicans initially condemning Trump's behavior only to later acquit him during his second impeachment and downplay or rationalize the attack serves as a reminder of the GOP's moral collapse. And I do believe that Donald Trump is going to run for president in 2024. I expect that he'll announce in the next couple of months, and I expect that he will easily win the nomination. And then my one final point on this, because I do believe like the testimony is damning. If you go to conservative media in America, like Fox News, it's not covered at all. I just went on the Fox News website. You can't find mention of the hearings, and they were newsworthy. So if you're in the America that looks at conservative media, this didn't happen. So these are some of the factors that make it so that this type of scandal, and I think scandal is too mild of a term here, is survivable for Donald Trump.
So back to you, John Fortier. Just to sum up, we've seen now more than a dozen in-person witnesses and probably hundreds of recorded testimonies that the committee has taken from people close to former President Trump's inner circle, members of his legal team, former high-level administration officials, such as those that appeared on July 21, and of course, even members of his family. These are mostly Republicans and also at the state level. What is the significance, in your view, John Fortier, of former Trump aides and supporters speaking out against his inaction, against the conspiracy, against the lie that somehow the election was stolen? How significant is that? And will that likely sway people, particularly in the Republican Party, who seem to still support former President Trump?
Well, I do think you see a bit of support falling away from Donald Trump, but I guess I want to more or less agree with Jim that it's a bit of support, not a wholesale loss of support. And certainly amongst his former aides, of whom some had testified, and some of the early testimony recently in the last month has opened up others to want to testify or be open to testifying. So I think there's some sort of break of some of his staff and some supporters. And there's a, I guess if you want to say, there's just an overhang of both the worries about January 6th, but also some exhaustion of Donald Trump and the intense drama that always surrounds him. So I think there's a little bit of falling away in conservative circles and Republican circles. But I think Jim is right that the former president said, not in an official statement, but kind of said he was going to run, right? We've been speculating he would. That's not official. But, you know, ultimately, the question is the base or lots of Republicans going to fall away from him? And it seems like, again, some have. There are some strong potential challengers out there, but it's still a very hard calculation for them to challenge Donald Trump. I think somebody like Ron DeSantis would be someone who, if Donald Trump weren't running, would be a very strong Trump-like candidate without some of the flaws. But will he decide that Donald Trump is weakened enough that it's worth taking a shot at him? I'm not sure he's that weak, so I just don't know how to weigh this. But I think that's going to be hanging over the election to some extent. I think more the presidential election than the midterm. As much as Donald Trump has inserted himself, I still think the midterm is going to be all fundamental things. And as Jim said, conservative media isn't covering it. I think that may be true, but I think as important as these issues are in some ways, the kind of more bread and butter issues of how do you feel about the country and the economy and those things tend to be biggest on people's minds. And just in polls, these issues are lower on people's minds, even in Democrats, but certainly in Republicans' minds. So as much as it's important, the idea that it is going to be transformative in this midterm election and going forward with Donald Trump as a candidate is still to be seen.
So Jim Kessler, once again, the significance of former very Republican Trump aides and supporters speaking out, whether it's White House counsel Pat Cipollone or Cassidy Hutchinson, who was the aide to Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, and the two we heard on July 21, who actually resigned from their posts on January 6, 2021, since they could not abide Mr. Trump's inaction, his endorsement of the violent insurrection. The significance of those, and to the extent that that enhances, you know, their credibility, insulating them really from partisan criticism.
It matters, but it only matters if that weapon, the opposition from within the Trump circle towards Trump, is deployed by somebody and is deployed in a big way. So what would need to happen is that some entity, some candidate, some group needs to spend hundreds of millions of dollars putting ads up in important states that Trump needs to win in the primary that features his own inner circle calling him unhinged and bat bleep crazy and all the other things that they said, so that the voters that have really not been paying attention to this, because as John said, voters are more concerned about the price of gas and the price of eggs than they are about Trump's histrionics right now. But you've got to get people to sort of pay attention and sour a lot more. The problem is, I don't know if there's anybody on the Republican side that's willing to do it. There has never really been any Republican who has really stiffened their spine and gone out strong against Donald Trump and has gone all the way and said, I'm going to spend the money. I'm going to take this to the finish line. Let me correct that. A couple have, like Liz Cheney and a few others and Adam Kinzinger. But if they haven't lost yet, they're going to lose soon. So there's a price to doing this, but somebody has to take up that mantle on the Republican side and deploy this through advertising and other ways to weaken Trump further.
We'll have more in just a minute. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard, Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. And they join me via Microsoft Teams. We are discussing the implications of the latest public hearing on the January 6th insurrection, and soon we'll be previewing the midterm elections. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on most of your favorite podcast apps. You may also download the show from the webpage, voaafrica.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel. Or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Here's a big shout out to a new loyal listener, Ahmed Yunana from Nigeria. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, John Fortier. Let's take a look at the next steps, potential indictments, and this would fall to the Attorney General, the Justice Department. Do you think that the committee is teeing up for the Justice Department to take the next steps of holding individuals accountable? There are charges floating around, you know, seditious conspiracy, because former President Trump literally, as Benny Thompson said, and others on the committee, summoned the mob, knowing they were armed, wanted desperately to go to the Capitol with them to stop the electoral count and to persuade former Vice President Pence to betray his oath of office, which, of course, he didn't, thank goodness. And for a time, you know, he saw things were working until they didn't, of course, on that fateful day. I guess the question is, some are saying, for example, that Attorney General Garland has waited now for this very public and highly political moment to occur before he himself takes the decision to indict Trump on any number of charges. What are your thoughts with regard to that next step? And to what extent, if that does occur, will that affect former President Trump's thoughts regarding his desire to run in 2024?
Well, the committee or members of the committee have been talking in a way that says that they believe that there are criminal matters that they could refer to the Justice Department. That in itself doesn't lead to an indictment. And the ability of the Attorney General to sort of prosecute crimes in court, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to speak too far out of my lane here, but there probably are some difficulties in getting convictions, at least for the former president, maybe certain aides. But I do think you are going to see, whether the Attorney General takes it up or in a number of state suits, you both have local suits from county officials in states like Georgia, you have financial issues. Donald Trump could face at least nuisance, one after another, of suits against him or worries about suits. And some think, well, maybe that will be something to deter him from running for office. I don't know that that's the case. You know, it may be the case that he would feel more comfortable being a public figure while all of this drama is going on. You know, I do think it's also difficult, unless the case is airtight and really going to go forward, for an administration to prosecute either the man himself or people around him, of the person you ran against the last election, the person you might run again. If it is warranted, the Justice Department has to think carefully about when they bring suits and whether they affect elections. That is one of the calculations they bring in. They don't always do that calculation right. People argue about sometimes whether they've done that properly. But for all those reasons, I think it's hard to imagine that there's going to be clear-cut suits and lots of people going to jail. But again, and I do think suits brought will sometimes get some backlash as well as being political. There clearly are literally politically elected officials in counties and states where the attorney general and leading election legal officials are elected people. Many people will think of that as just a partisan way of getting at Donald Trump. So again, I think at the end of the day, the likelihood that this prevents him from running for president if he wants to or really puts him in jail is probably small, but it's something that will be in the air both at the state, federal, and local levels in a number of arenas.
Well, that is true. At state, local levels, we're seeing trouble for former President Trump, particularly in the state of Georgia, where he made a phone call to the Secretary of State asking him to find a bunch of votes that would put him over the top, just find them, whether that's legitimate or not. And of course, the Republican Secretary of State resisted to do that. Nonetheless, let me turn to Jim Kessler. Jim, many analysts and others are saying that our democracy is at stake, that the failure of the Justice Department to build a case because there's so much evidence against Trump would be even worse than perhaps any political fallout from doing so. You know, they've been going after the so-called foot soldiers, the members of the Oath Keepers, the domestic terrorism group, and others who followed former President Trump's orders to come to the Capitol and try to stop the steal, so to speak. So they're saying, you know, it would be a dereliction of duty of the Justice Department. And then one other question, you mentioned that you think that Trump is going to run again and that he will be the nominee. But Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell recently said that he doesn't think Donald Trump will clear the Republican presidential field, even if he decides to run. So one, your take on what the Justice Department will or will not do, and perhaps that comment by Mitch McConnell.
So, Carol, you started off by saying that there's the belief that American democracy is at stake, and I agree with you 100%. The issue is there were two impeachment attempts of Donald Trump during his first term, and neither of them really worked. They didn't damage his standing, and whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I think he came out of those in some ways stronger than before. So for those who say that the Justice Department has a duty, you know, to protect democracy to do this, you have a duty if you think you can win, okay? If you've got a pretty good chance of thinking that you can win. And like John, I am not a lawyer, so I don't know if the Justice Department could win this case or not win this case. There are people around Trump in his Trump orbit that I do think are very vulnerable to either federal prosecution or state prosecution. That should definitely happen as well. And the other thing that really needs to happen is there is a large part of the Republican Party that desperately does not want Donald Trump to run for president again, be the nominee, or be president again. That wing of the Republican Party needs to speak up and needs to be part of the group that is encouraging the Justice Department to prosecute Donald Trump so that this doesn't seem like a partisan exercise. And you concluded with what Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said, that Trump would not be able to clear the field should he run, and that it would be a competitive race. That's as far as Mitch McConnell, who despises Donald Trump, by the way, that is as far as Mitch McConnell really has been willing to go. And if you are a Republican leader who really believes that Donald Trump is a danger to this country, and I believe that Mitch McConnell believes that, you have to step out a lot further. You really have to put your career on the line, put your reputation on the line, put your social media reputation on the line, and do a lot more. And thus far, the number of Republicans who have been willing to do that, you can basically count on, you know, your hands and toes. You need dozens and dozens and dozens more, and definitely more powerful Republicans to do it, or else he's going to be the nominee. I think it's true the field won't be cleared for him. That's fine. He doesn't need a cleared field. In fact, if it was one-on-one, Trump versus somebody else, he probably would lose. He wants a crowded field. That's how he won the last time, and that's how he'll win this time.
All right. Well, speaking of winning, gentlemen, we're going to conclude briefly on a preview of the midterms at this juncture. We talk about it quite a bit. So back to you, John Fortier. President Biden's poll numbers are in the tank, so to speak. He's really not doing very well, even among Democrats. Inflation, all kinds of headwinds are occurring. Talk about what's going to happen, in your view, with respect to the midterm elections, given the poll numbers. Will they be offset somehow by the fact that the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, a right to a federal abortion? Will that drive Democrats and somehow offset, you know, some of Biden's shortcomings? How do you see that?
Well, I think the story hasn't changed dramatically, but you're right that Joe Biden's poll numbers, which were not very good 3 months ago, are even worse today. His job approval ratings for a first-term president going into a midterm are the lowest we have in modern polling history, going into first-term midterm. So he's in bad shape. That's a terrible number. There's anxiety about the economy, some of the mixed feelings about the economy that seem to have growth, as well as other bad things happening now, seems to have tipped even more to worries about inflation. And I think the overall atmosphere by any sort of standard measure is very bad for Joe Biden. Now, I do note that there are a lot of people searching for and seeing perhaps counter currents to this bad news for Democrats and for the Democrat being in the White House. Maybe that the Dobbs case, overturning of Roe v. Wade, might energize Democratic voters, or January 6th. There's some question of, well, maybe there's some people who just don't like Joe Biden and they're actually more willing to support Democrats. I think in theory, some of these things are possible, but I guess I'm more of a fundamentals person. And to me, the fundamentals look terrible for the Democratic Party at this point. I mean, I'll add into this that there are people who think Republicans have picked some bad candidates in some of key Senate races. And, you know, I think there may be some issues there, but at the end of the day, I think the fundamentals are going to drive a lot of good things in the Republican direction and bad things in the Democratic direction. So things to me look certainly bad on the House, Senate, state legislative front, all across the way, just because those fundamentals are really terrible. If for some reason those other factors turn things around, I think you would see some of that reflected in Joe Biden's popularity. That, to me, is a very big number that unless things turn around, this looks like a very bad midterm election for Democrats.
Jim Kessler, you get the last word, a bad midterm election. And, you know, with your finger on the pulse of Democrats, why is Joe Biden a good guy by most accounts? Not a controversial fellow. He came into office to restore the soul of the nation. He's got a lot of headwinds, not of his making. Of course, inflation, some of the side effects of the COVID pandemic, the supply chain blocks, and of course, Russia's invaded Ukraine. A lot of things are going on. The overturning of Roe v. Wade, arguably not his fault. You have a conservative majority on the Supreme Court, thanks to the former president. Can the Democrats eke something out? Particularly, could the abortion issue drive Democrats to the poll in such numbers that, you know, that could affect perhaps the balance of the Senate, keep it in the Democrats' hands, or even some of the state races?
I have been pessimistic about Democrats' chances all year. Over the last several weeks, I've become more optimistic. I think there are some fundamentals that have changed. I don't see the Democrats keeping the House or the Senate, but I also don't see the landslide losses that I thought that we were going to see for a couple of reasons. One is the Roe v. Wade case, the Dobbs case, it matters. And one of the things that happened right away was a 10-year-old girl in Ohio raped, needing an abortion, unable to get an abortion because it is outlawed in that state, having to be ferried across state lines for it to happen. And when there's hypotheticals out there, you know, it doesn't really drive voters. But suddenly this has gotten very, very real. And there are a lot of women who are concerned about it. There's a lot of men who are concerned about it. There's a lot of young voters who are concerned about it. Number two is gas prices have dropped 60 cents since June 14th. If that price continues to drop, I think the mood of the country will be better. Inflation is definitely weighing on Democrats and weighing on Joe Biden. But the biggest inflation item out there that people see is gas prices. There's been some improvement there. And then the other factor is Republican really terrible candidates. Herschel Walker in Georgia, he's unhinged worse than Donald Trump. He just should not be in the United States Senate. And in a race that Republicans really feel they ought to win, there's a really good chance the Democrat will pull that out. In Pennsylvania, Democrats have a good candidate, John Fetterman, that's for the seat of retiring Pat Toomey, who's a Republican. The Republicans nominated Mehmet Oz, and he's got one big problem. He's from New Jersey, and I'm from Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvanians do not like people from New Jersey, and they certainly don't want to elect somebody from New Jersey. So there's a decent chance that we will steal that seat. Joe Biden's popularity is very low, but he is not a despised president. So I think some of the unpopularity is a little bit soft. And some of that unpopularity is among Democrats who don't feel that he's liberal enough, but they'll vote for Democratic candidates. So the bottom line for me is, instead of losing 40 or 50 House seats, I think it'll be closer to 20 or 30 for Democrats, which would still give Republicans the majority. And instead of 5 Senate seats, I think that net Democrats will lose 2 Senate seats, which will also give Republicans a majority, but not as big a majority.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Forty, a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.